outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a book on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun. Our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
It ain't a bunch of beans like they serve in the Navy.
It's bacon and eggs,
biscuits and gravy.
Biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs. Whole pot of coffee down to the dregs. When I get out of bed, my belly big. For biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs. That's biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs.
Good morning, everybody. This is Inside Outdoors. I'm Don Jordan, right here in Bloomington, Indiana.
I'm Rich Reardon.
And this is Alan Bronenberg.
How you doing, fellas?
Good.
Cold.
Cold and good.
Cold.
Well, actually, today we're recording today on Tuesday, and this will air on Saturday, and it's actually pretty warm today. It's not too bad, comparatively.
Yeah.
Well, I saw it was 43 in Ferdinand today.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's pretty warm for January in Indiana.
Absolutely.
It really is.
I think it was 41 in Bloomington today.
Yeah.
So
didn't feel too bad. I didn't have too heavy of coat on or anything when I was out messing around today, which is always nice.
Yeah, I went out and took the trash out and did some other things, and it was... It was just a pleasure. I took a buddy for a walk and enjoyed the day. I don't think we're going to get more of them because it's going to get cold again.
Cold again. As long as it don't, we don't get those feet of snow like they're getting dumped on out east. You know, I understand that both Buffalo was a victim again.
Yep.
Yeah, they're always a victim.
Yeah.
You know, they were calling Indiana the middle of the donut hole, the winter donut hole, because like literally everyone around us was getting pounded and we're not. It was really, I don't remember odd weather like that before where everybody was getting nailed north of us, south of us, east of us, west of us, and we're just sitting here with nothing. So,
who's arguing?
Yeah. No. I think we're short of a foot of snow.
Yeah, I saw that on, well, actually it was, I saw last week there was a snow measurement on one of the TV stations in Indianapolis, and it said that we were 9.5 inches down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
9.5.
11.5 today. So I'm like.
11.5 today.
Yeah. I'm not missing that one bit.
No shoveling.
Well, speaking of weather, water level at Lake Monroe is 539.75, so it's still up a little bit. And the however, the temperature keeps inching down, not too much, but a little bit. It's down to 43.5 right now.
Oh, man.
Well, that's too cold for skinny dipping.
That is.
That's too cold for anything I'm good for.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that is, I guess, is good, you know, for you guys like to fish in the winter, the boat ramps are open.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's no dock at Cutright. I saw some guy complained about that. And well, you know, if you're going to fish in the winter, I guess you got to figure that there's not going to be any docks out.
Right.
And we talked about this last week. They take them out because the lake freezes sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
And when it freezes, that plays the dickens with the docks. Dickens with the docks.
Well, you and raise and lower, too. I mean, mainly raise in the wintertime, of course. So that I assume that for most of the floating docks that are put in ever around here, that's always a problem. You know, years ago, we used to see J-Dock break loose and float across the lake and end up down at the bottom of my hill down here. So I assume that they're trying to prevent that.
The sailing marina, of course, is, you know, they're subject to fluctuations like that. And but that doesn't really matter too much in the winter for them. So there's not too many people out sailing. There might be some, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the approaches, the walkways from the land up to the docks, that's the ones that get sunken when the water comes up. So it makes it impossible to get out to the dock.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
I had one thing I did see, you know, talk about this just briefly.
Yes.
Got on the air, the increasing size of the fingerlings for walleye that they're using statewide now. They're doubling or tripling the size of the fingerlings so that they're, you know, I assume more able to fight off being eaten by the bigger fish and shorter turnaround time to where they're catchable. So not sure what brought that about, but I noticed it posted maybe a week or two ago, and that's probably good news for walleye fishermen, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so too. It can't hurt anything.
Yeah,
for sure. They're not going to eat all the gizzards you had.
Yep.
They're not going to eat all the wipers. They better keep their heads down around those wipers. I always wonder where they're going to put those walleyes in when they put them in. They used to put them in down off the dam, you know, right where the wipers weren't there when they first started doing.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah, down by the dam, by where everything gets sucked out.
Well, right at the boat ramp there.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
At the dam ramp.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. It's like the dam boat shop that used to be up there.
Dan's.
Yeah, Dan and Peggy.
Yeah.
Sweet. There's not a lot of fishing activity going on. I don't hear of it going on at Cataract. I haven't seen too much chit chat on the internet about it.
Yeah, there's not much going outside the window here, I can tell you that. I haven't seen a boat, even though it's a little warmer, I haven't seen a boat this winter, I don't believe.
Well, I think since November, there was some fishing activity in November, but not much in December. And
no.
I guess none now. Maybe somebody.
Usually on New Year's Day, there'll be some intoxicated, crazy individual get his speedboat out and zip up and down the lake, just for the fun of it, just to be the first out on the lake for the year, I guess. I haven't seen that this year either.
Yeah. Well, spring is only a couple more months away.
It is indeed. Did you see Herald Times today? I happened to notice it as I walked by the stand at Kroger when I was in there today. 47 deer taken at Griffey?
Yes, that was last week, I think.
Was it last week? It could have very well been last week's paper laying there.
It was on the Bloomingtonian while we were driving. Joe was reading it off of her phone.
Oh, wow.
They sometimes they never have a whole lot of stories, but they sometimes really scoop the HT.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that was one of them, but probably was. Anyway, yeah, 47 deer by 35 hunters, 34 or 35 hunters.
Yeah, 35 hunters, I believe that's what it said. Yeah,
and they had to they couldn't get enough hunters from within Monroe County, so they had to go to some outside counties.
Yeah,
to scrape together a few more hunters. But they got 47 deer. That's a lot of deer, it seems like, for a relatively small place like Griffey Woods down there.
For that little place, yeah, I would agree. I thought it was a pretty big number. I think the past numbers had been somewhere around 40, so it was a little bit more than the usual, but not markedly so.
Well, I noticed on my backyard cam that there's two deer coming through there now instead of one, and a raccoon or two, and some cats, you know.
I pulled in from my errands right before sunset. There must have been 12 deer out in the backfield. All does, of course, are all together. It must have been a bumper crop of deer this spring. There was I'll bet half of them were yearlings. At least half of the 12 out there were yearlings. So they lot of deer that made it through the season this year.
Well, that's good for the deer hunters, not good for the hostas.
Yeah.
Not good for the insurance companies.
Yeah, I was going to say the Mrs. B will be putting up higher fence around the garden this year, I'm sure.
Well, I'm glad to think about that time of year. But right now, I guess for outdoors people or people who are interested in wildlife in this country, the biggest story that's going on is this massacre of wolves out in the West. They were taken off the endangered species list during the last president's tenure. And the New York Times, that's a bad word for some people who in our audience probably, but they had a piece in there called the slaughter of wolves like this hasn't been seen in a century. And that's a long time, but I believe they're probably true. And they got together a bunch of statistics on the wolves in Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho. Now, some of these are just about Montana, and that's Montana. There's been 124 gray wolves killed since September opening of the hunting season in Montana. 124. 15 of those are just north of Yellowstone and could be parts of the Yellowstone packs. They can't, of course, hunt these Yellowstone wolves inside the park, but they step outside the park, they don't know what's coming. Well, they do now. And in Idaho, here's, now we're talking about these other three states. Montana and Wyoming. We got Idaho. In Idaho, you can hunt and trap as many wolves as you want on private land.
Wow.
How about that? And you can bait the wolves. You can run them down with a ATV or snowmobile at dark. They stalk them at night. And in Montana, an individual hunter can get 20 wolves a year. 20.
That's unbelievable.
That's a lot of wolves. And both Montana and Idaho pay bounties on wolves.
Wow.
I don't know how much the bounty is, but it stimulates more wolf killing, of course. And there is no limit in Wyoming. No limit across 85% of the state, according to the Times. And in all three states, wolf pups can be killed. And that includes in the den. In the den.
Yeah, I read that. That's horrifying.
Well, that's been going on for a while, too. That was another thing permitted under the last administration's rules. And finally, and of course, we had this happen in Wisconsin earlier this year where they jumped the gun and then backed off. And now they're going to have it or they're not going to have it. But they ended up killing 60 wolves before anybody could say whipstitch. And finally, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says they're going to do a 12-month review.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that that kind of wolf slaughter is going to sustain that population for very long. I can't imagine that wolf populations will survive that more than a few years.
They're pretty prolific, and you know, as long as the there's some in the Yellowstone boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be some more coming.
Okay. But,
boy, once they get off the reservation.
Yeah.
And it's tough on you if you're a wolf.
Well, this has been talked about for years. The real solid evidence that wolves are a problem to cattle herds is not very strong. I mean, it's mainly anecdotal. I don't think that anybody really has, at least I've never heard anything that was plausible enough to open up hunting on wolves.
Well, there have been. I remember one distinctly actually took place in Oregon where some wolves had killed 15 or 20 cattle.
Oh, wow.
And, at some ranch. But that's the only one I ever heard of, actually that happened. And I think the problem was is that the rancher did not get reimbursed. And while wolves were on the endangered list, ranchers got reimbursed by the federal government for animals that were killed by wolves,
right?
At least around Montana and Wyoming area, because of the park, because where the park was had the wolves.
But Don, that just leads me to believe that if there really were a lot of wolf kills, there'd be people reporting them just to collect the money, if nothing else. The fact that we didn't see any giant jump in those numbers, at least I've never seen that. They may exist somewhere. I think that just is strong evidence that the wolves really were not that big of a. I was a cattle farmer myself. We had problems with coyotes, mainly with running them, not really killing them. We finally got a couple of Great Pyrenees to stop that. So I'm completely sympathetic to the fact that cattlemen don't have enough margin to lose a bunch of calves every year. So, we can't have that. But what I'm saying is I just am not aware that that ever was really that big of a problem.
Well, Don, is there... I just have a quick question about the amount of natural deaths. Is there any data on... I know that it's probably old age and injuries, but they don't have a lot of predators other than maybe a bison.
A bison isn't preying on them.
No.
They're defending themselves.
Right. So is there predators, and what would be the natural selection? Like how is there any data on that, like comparatively to the hunts?
There may be, but not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
The only wolf period that I know of that died of injury was the beta female in that pack that used to run the Lamar Soda Butte area. And she impaled herself on a stick sticking up out of, a bush chasing a buffalo or an elk. So there's obviously some natural mortality, and if they get injured in trying to take down a buffalo, I'd say they could well get injured there. And other than that, disease, maybe injuries from their own kind. Yeah, I don't know that happens, but no, I'd say mortality is pretty much in the hands of the government. It's my guess anyway.
Possibly bears, I would think, in some areas maybe.
Of course, they would probably prevail against a pack of wolves. Bear might prevail in any case. Now, I noticed in one of the articles about this, somebody noted that or said that bears or wolves are not apex, meaning the top predator.
Right.
And maybe they're not, but boy, they're right up there with the grizzly bear, I'd have to say. And other than that, what else you got? You know, you got a few black bears, but not anywhere near the kind of predation that a grizzly bear or a wolf can bring.
No. So I wouldn't think so. And the notion of apex predators, I think, is probably far more important in areas where there's a much higher density of predators than we currently see in almost anywhere in the United States. I mean, there's just not the density of all of those to really single out, what is the apex predator in a given area? And in a given area, it may be the wolf because they're the only predator left in that area. If there's wolves and bears, I assume it's probably a bear. But that's, I can't imagine. Yeah.
You have to say that Yellowstone is the test case. Things are pretty much left alone there. It's nature on its own, except that the animals do go outside of the park. And buffalo get nailed when they walk out of the side of the park during the buffalo hunting season. So do wolves, probably. 12 in the northern, on the northern edge of Yellowstone, kind of leads you to believe that might be happening.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, they're just magnificent creatures. And you take a look at some of those videos they show, that one trail cam, they all look like great big German shepherds. Of course, you can't tell how big they are without some reference points. And
right.
I don't know whether you guys have ever seen a wolf, but they're a foot taller than a German shepherd.
They absolutely are.
they're big.
They're big, and they're just gorgeous. Beautiful, beautiful animals.
Biggest dog you ever saw.
Yep.
In the movie Dances with Wolves, if you remember, they have a real good one that's in there. If you ever see that, you can kind of get an idea about how big they are. Their legs are so long, and they have these big paws. They're just huge.
Well, I have seen a couple, and saw a dead one, unfortunately, and I've seen a number of tracks out in Montana, and the couple of tracks that I've seen, good ones where you could really tell what they were. They were huge, They're as big as a man's hand or bigger.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of startling, actually.
Well, we continue to see our foxes at the patio door here. They have to be somewhere on the north-facing hill down by the lake, possibly where the trees are uprooted. I'm sure there's little holes in the ground, caverns, little caves for them to get in and out. But they come up the same way every time. They know exactly when the dog's inside, and they come up to eat the cat food. So when the dog's out, we don't see them, but they seem very friendly, very unafraid of humans. They're afraid of the dog, of course, but we've been seeing the foxes as a pair of them with real regularity now.
Oh, that's cool. That's good. They're very handsome critters. Before we run out of time, I think we ought to mention this rabbit hemorrhagic disease. I think you guys both saw the stuff from the DNR about this. But anyway, the DNR is asking for the public's help. And what has happened is that a case of this disease, rabbit hemorrhagic disease, was confirmed in a domestic rabbit in Kentucky. And I don't know why that rings the bell here, but it must be highly transmissible and is moving across the country, according to the DNR. They say it's highly contagious, and it's known to affect all rabbit species. They say it can cause widespread population declines, and this may have happened in Indiana in the past. Indiana's wildlife health team is monitoring for the presence of this disease. The most common signs of rabbit hemorrhagic disease, it's a virus, includes loss of coordination and a blood-stained nose. Well, that's pretty good tips. If you see a rabbit staggering around out there with a bleed or a nosebleed, or even if you see a rabbit staggering around or one or the other, you know, they want you to get in touch with them. And that's wildlife.indiana.gov. And you'll see a link to the rabbit hemorrhagic disease. And they want you to tell them about it, of course. It says, if you find multiple dead wild rabbits in a single area, do not touch the animals. Report the incident using our online reporting tool, which you'll see when you go to wildlife.indiana.gov, wildlife.in.gov, and check for sick wildlife.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's not clear to me is whether that can be spread to other species, like the predatory birds that we find out here. A rabbit probably wouldn't be dead and laying on the ground for more than a few minutes out here without something picking it up and carrying it off.
Well, that's possible, but they surely would have said so.
And I
really never heard of this disease in any other animal. Yeah, I've heard of the disease being around in the past, and may have been responsible for some cottontail rabbit declines in the past. But recently, there seems to be a fairly good population of rabbits, at least in Bloomington. So I'm not so sure there's so many of them out there in the country.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's enough to hunt. I mean, out where I am, there's just very little. I'd have a hard time finding a rabbit.
The rabbits are smarter too than they used to be, it seems. You know, they know they can slap a dog better than they used to, is what I'm told anyway. I haven't been out with a good beagle for a long time. But anyway, if you see these dead rabbits, if you find a dead rabbit, be careful. Don't touch it.
No.
And report it.
Hey, and with that, we're about done for this week. We got 30 seconds left, so I just want to say thanks for coming in again to Inside Outdoors every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. And thanks for coming on, you guys. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, too. Have a good week.
All right. Well, thanks also to you, Alan, and hopefully we won't get too much bad weather up here. So.
Yeah, you're looking like the Buddha this morning, Alan. Okay,
I think he froze. All right.
Okay, we'll see you, Rich.
All right, see you. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on WFHB with hosts Don Jordan, Rich Reardon, Buddy Bill Moser, and D. Allen Brodenberg. And by the way, if you missed the show, you can listen online at InsideOutdoorsRadio.com or right here on WFHB's website under Public Affairs. We hope to see you next week right here on Inside Outdoors.